All right, welcome into Gun Talk Hunt. Today on Gun Talk Hunt, we've got Tim Fallon with FTW Ranch, guy who's hunted all over the world, and has a few stories for you. Gun Talk Hunt today is brought to you by Leupold, also by Timney Triggers. You know Timney Triggers, very easy to install, and the trigger will help you be a better shooter. We've been shooting Timneys this week.
This week, we've been shooting them all week.
And
we've shot different triggers, too, with not the same.
Some guns, stock triggers, some of them, I'll be honest, I didn't like as much. I like a good trigger. Also, ATN Optics, been shooting those a lot this week.
The ABL.
ABL, rangefinder that talks to the optic, makes adjustments in your scope, kind of neat. Obviously, they've got night vision, they've got thermal, they've got all kinds of stuff going on.
Check them out.
We've been looking at the critters on the FTW Ranch with thermal.
I think that's one of the biggest things out here. One of the coolest things you can do is drive around and you get to see all these things come out at night. And there's hundreds of them.
Yeah.
Hundreds. They're everywhere.
So, Tim, we've come back to the FTW Ranch to do some filming of a bunch of different stuff. This is an incredible place.
Thank you.
I mean, for people who are kind of going, well, what's that? What's the FTW Ranch? How do you explain it?
What's the background? How does one come to acquire 12,000 acres?
Well,
one acre at a time.
Yeah, I was really drunk one night in a bar. No, I'm kidding. We bought this with the intent in 1996 of setting up a ranching operation for endangered or extinct animals where they're indigenous from.
Okay.
Kind of pay it forward sort of thing. But they have to do well in these rugged mountains, so I wouldn't have things like scimitar horned oryx or Dama gazelle and that sort of thing, which are very endangered.
Mm-hmm.
Which led into with the intent of starting a hunter training program. By 96, I'd done a lot of hunting, and I saw the need for it, including in myself. And I did some research, and there just was no such thing.
Hunter training.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people who grow up hunting are into it. A lot of them don't think about the idea of training to be a hunter. They think, well, I've just been hunting all my life.
Sure. Yeah, and we see that a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, like every week.
You know what I think happens is they come out here, well, I don't really need this, but I'm going to see what it's about. And I bet their takeaways from this is mind-blowing, because I've been here a day and a half, and we didn't go through a course, and I'm dreaming about it at night.
You literally was dreaming about
shooting positions
last night.
Yeah, all night. I'd walk through it, because one of your instructors, Dave, he was walking us through all this stuff, and I'm like, I could use that. I could have used that on this hunt. I could have used that on another hunt.
Yeah.
And it just haunts me.
Well, one of my favorite stories, I'll cut to the chase real quickly, but is the husband who comes with the wife, because she wants to start hunting, because he's been hunting everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. So she's like, you know what, I'm going to start doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So women are smart. They know they need to go get trained, learn how to shoot, and be a better hunter, right, or be a good hunter. So the husband's here, he's like, oh, God, I don't need to be here. This is boring. By day two, she is whacking him. I mean,
she's
ping, ping, ping out, all the way out, and he's struggling, and okay, I get it. What am I doing wrong? So pretty soon, he gets humbled real quick. He
gets on board.
Yeah. It's a wonderful experience, yeah.
Yeah, man, I guess it's not just, you guys have kind of what I would say is the why, kind of your core about this, and it comes down to that first shot. How do you explain that?
Well, as a hunter, it is our job to kill the animal in the first shot. Now, will it always happen? No. But should be our goal.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we do is teach the absolute importance of being sure of your first shot. It's not called hoping I hit it.
Mm-hmm.
It's called killing it. I mean, hunting is killing.
Yes.
And so, and hunting's also conservation. And to be a good conservationist, you don't need to go around wounding animals.
Yeah, absolutely.
Besides that, it's very expensive and stupid. But so we push the idea of, look, just make sure of your first shot. If you question your shot when you're looking through the scope, don't shoot. It's okay.
Right.
Go back to the lodge, have a beer, have a cup of coffee, and come back the next day and try it again.
But it's so hard. It's so, because as a guy out in the woods all the time, it's hard to sit there and call someone off of their largest animal ever. They may not ever have that shot again. But it's opened my eyes to it, too.
Mm-hmm.
Acceptable reticle movement.
Yes, acceptable
and
reticle
and
movement.
That
the arm, we call it the arm, yeah.
The arm. It's easier to say, I like that.
Yeah, I like that better, yeah. But it's hard to call off a guy or call yourself off of that
shot. Well, that's it. I think you have to get to the point where you can call yourself off. And that's something else that you guys kind of work on here is it's not teaching someone to shoot animals at a particular far distance. It's figuring out what your distance is.
Right. And
right.
You're right. And that's a very good point. We teach exactly just the opposite. Mm-hmm. And we don't tell a guy, look, your max limit's 400 yards. That's not our decision to make. Mm-hmm. That's a moral decision.
Right.
But we show them that, yeah, you see this on TV where people are shooting elk at 900 yards. And I just personally, I think that's immoral. Okay. It's wrong.
Yeah.
Because you think you missed it and you just shot that thing in the guts and it's going to walk off and die a miserable death for 7 days. It's just not right. And I don't care who you are. And look, we train 150 snipers here a year, mm-hmm. military snipers. Mm-hmm. And nobody's immune to what we call hair in the scope. And when you put animal hair in the scope, I don't care who you are, including myself, you're going to lose it at some point. I mean, like to your point, you walk over the hill and here's a 200-inch ram, and you're going to lose your stuff. You're going to throw everything out the window because your heart rate's going nuts.
Cool.
You're about to crap your pants.
Exactly. I'd be shaking.
And you're shaking literally. And you just got to stop, relax, breathe, and just talk to yourself. You know, and just walk yourself all the way through it and make yourself, and even do a dry fire. It's a really good idea.
Really?
And if your sheep's at 300 or 400 yards, you got time. If you don't have time, don't try the shot, right?
Right. Right. You shouldn't be rushed anyway.
No, absolutely.
So he and I are right on the same line of that long range hunting bit. No, thank you.
No.
Because I grew up, I shot long range. We have wide open spaces. Mm-hmm. But now that I'm out of shooting long range consistently, like, I don't trust myself to make those shots anymore.
Right. Well, we were in Wyoming a few weeks back, and we stalked within, it was about 400, 410 yards of this antelope, but it was real windy, and he's on his knees, on sticks, and I'm looking at it, and to your credit, you go, no, this is no good.
Good for you.
I can't do this.
Good for you. You think about that, and I look back at what I've learned this week, and it was the right call. But I wouldn't have been able to make that call because I wasn't as stable as I should be.
Yeah.
And he was about to crest a hill. I don't know what's over that hill.
Right.
So that bullet has to go somewhere. And if I don't take it upon myself to be responsible enough to say, no, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
There's other goats out there.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not that one.
So you guys have, Tim, you've got this incredible trophy room or rooms of critters here. Every time I go into any house, even if it's a house with one deer on the wall, those trophies always have a story, and it's always fun to hear the stories. I certainly grew up in a family with lots of stories of like, well, let me tell you about this goat, let me tell you about that sheep or whatever.
Sure.
Are there any that come to mind when you kind of think back of ones that were like, well, that was interesting, or that didn't go as planned, or whatever it is? I mean, there's probably a few.
Yeah, it's funny. I look around the room with, 300 plus trophies in it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a memory to every one of them. You remember every one. And I try to mount the animal, have it taxidermied in the position it was in when I shot it.
Okay.
It was kind of a cool, different way to do it.
That is.
Well, it also kind of jogs your memory a little bit.
Yeah, it does.
It's like
but
a picture.
I'll be brutally honest with you. Some of my favorite hunts, I never fired a shot.
Really?
Yeah. Like 2019. Spent 21 days. Sorry, 26 days, 11 days, and then another trip for 15 days, hunting one elephant, an elephant.
Really?
And I could have killed thousands in Namibia, but we were after the one elephant we saw on day two. It was a 100-pounder plus, just magnificent, surrounded by five smaller bulls.
Really?
So we knew which one he is.
Yeah.
It was. We bumped him six times. The sixth time was on the 25th day.
Oh, my gosh.
And I had the time of my life. It was awesome.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, and deal on elephants. You know, you don't kill them with your gun. You kill them with your feet. You shoot them with your gun.
Right.
Yeah. So I mean,
a lot of miles.
A couple hundred miles. Yeah, it was nuts.
A couple hundred miles.
Yeah. Oh, it was nuts. That's probably my favorite hunt of all time.
No kidding. Of course,
the outfitter, he felt terrible. And I'm like, buddy,
dude, this was
I've
awesome.
Had the time of my life.
That's a lot of hunting.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. It's not about because one single shot, you kill the animal. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But
25, 26 days of hunting.
But I thought if you go to Africa, you just walk out and you drive around in a vehicle and you see it and you just shoot it.
Right. Yeah, it's just like
that's right?
Yeah.
Or is that wrong?
No, that's wrong.
No, that's what we're on this ranch and it is captivating to see all these animals. And they're not just stranded. They go everywhere.
Yeah. You got 12,000 acres?
12,000,
right?
Yeah.
That's that's a lot of land.
It's a lot of square miles.
Yeah. And we're finding ourselves, and you know, we're hunters, and we can spot game okay, but you find like, ooh, look.
It's a lot different.
And you're still spotting and you're hunting.
Well,
there's
hunters in camp now that are still looking for an ibex.
Mm-hmm.
And they were on it all morning.
Looking for the right
all
one,
morning.
Stalking it through all these canyons and different openings.
This is her fourth day to hunt that goat.
Really?
That one goat. Yeah. I mean, this is not
cool.
You just talked about hunting that elephant. Talk about that for a minute. I mean, that's a little bit different than I'm just going to find an elephant to shoot.
Right.
When you go, no, that's the one. And you start hunting that particular animal. I mean, that's kind of neat.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
What is that like to say, no, this is the one. It's either that one or it's nothing. Because it's that one.
Well, I mean, you know, for the first time elephant hunter, it would have been, okay, you see a reasonable one and you'd most likely shoot it.
Right.
I've shot several elephants, so but I've always wanted 100 pounder, you know, 100 pounds of ivory in one side or the other.
Right.
And this guy was magnificent. He's just a big old bull, and he was old.
Really. Mm-hmm.
Probably close to his last set of teeth.
Yeah.
An old war horse and guarded by 5 younger bulls. And the whole story was just kind of romantic and exciting and fun. And, you know, you just set your mind on that. And
so how close did you get to him?
Probably 8 yards was the closest.
8 yards?
Yeah, we were close. But the wind kept swirling. So every time we tried to get in position for a proper
shot.
The
right shot.
Boom, they'd smell us. And
really?
They're blind as a bat, but, man, they have smelling like unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well, and so they'd get a whiff of us and gone.
The trunk goes up like a periscope.
Yeah, when they're sniffing and they're curious, they know something's wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in this case, the wind was so bad all the time. It was
8 yards?
Yeah.
8 yards.
Most time, the other 5 times, we probably, you know, 15 to 20 yards.
How close do you want to get?
Well, as close as you can.
Right.
But he was in such dense cover, we had to work in close. And then all of a sudden, the wind switched.
Because I've heard before that sometimes elephants can be harder to spot than other animals because they're so big.
Yeah.
You're used to looking for a deer-sized animal,
right,
not something that's, I don't know, whatever, 10 feet at the shoulder or something.
That's true. You know, it's funny about an elephant. People ask me, well, what's the best camo? Well, in Africa, it's gray with broken lines. Because you can hide an elephant 5 yards. It's unbelievable.
Really?
Oh, I've been chased many times. All of a sudden, there's a cow screaming at you. And you go running the other way, obviously. You try not to have to shoot them, obviously. But it's a great camo, gray with broken lines.
It works. That's
and
it.
Who would think a zebra is a great camo, right?
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Really?
Yeah. It just blends. It just fades in the eye. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Weird.
It's the pattern.
Yeah.
So you hunt all this game, and you've hunted everywhere. Ryan and I are confined stateside for a little bit. What would you say the toughest quarry is for you?
Elephant.
By far.
Second would be buffalo worldwide. Although, having said that, went Lord Derby hunting and back in 2002 in Central African Republic. And that's one of the 4 species of eland. And that's a tough son of a gun.
Really?
And it's in the savannah, so it's kind of like sort of wide open.
Okay.
And geez, that was the hottest 7. I killed it on day seven.
Yeah.
Honestly, by accident. I mean, it was hot, 110, 115 degrees. And we would take breaks every 20 minutes, drink some water.
Mm-hmm.
And this one day, 7 days, on day 7, we all kind of got under this big acacia tree with happened to have a lot of thorn bush around the base. And we crawled up in there to get in the shade and get out of the sun for a little bit. And everybody was sleeping, all the trackers and the pH. And I'm sitting there up, rolling my neck like this. And all of a sudden, I hear this. And when those eland walk, they click their heels. And so you can hear them, a distinct sound.
Yeah.
And I thought, no way, you have to be kidding me. And that we had chased the herd off. That's when we took the break.
Because
they have eyesight and good smell.
Right? Yeah.
And the things, they didn't know what they got spooked at, and about 20 minutes later, they thought, nah, that was nothing, let's go back.
Come back out.
And sure enough,
that's where they wanted.
I nudged my PH, who nudged everybody else, and, you know, did this, and we let him get it within about 60 yards and whacked him. But
wow.
That was luck. I will freely admit to you, I wasn't, by day 7, I wasn't sure I was going to get one.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, God, it was hot.
So, when do you hunt those?
Normally, you're going to hunt the Lord Derby in what they call the later period, which is generally going to be, you know, February, that's kind of their, our winter.
Right.
But it's their hot season. So February, March, and into mid-April.
Yeah.
And then you do the jungle hunt. So it's, today, most of your Lord Derby, almost all of it, is Cameroon. Casilla can't go to anymore.
Thick stuff.
And then you switch to the jungle, right. And that's late April, May, June, July.
Yeah.
Which is the bongo and all the other stuff.
That's what I was thinking of, bongo. Yeah. I've seen some of that. That's interesting because you're hunting them in thick cover and
jungle.
And talk about blending.
Yeah.
And all the trees and all that stuff.
And the problem is you can't see anything. And the coolest part about the jungle is you're hunting with pygmies. And they are awesome. They're just I've done it three times. They're wonderful people to deal with, yeah.
And they're tracking animals and stuff like that too?
Yeah, no, and like the bongo, you can use dogs too.
Okay. Because
without a dog, it's pure luck. You're going to get in a machan and just hope they come in.
Right.
With the dogs, they can actually track, and they can tell by the track if it's a good one, they'll let the dogs off. And about 25% of the time, you'll get onto a bongo.
Wow.
Other than that, it's several miles cutting your brush, through the brush, and you come out looking like you've been through a meat saw. It's thorns and... It's hot and sweaty, and
there's no dull edges.
Aren't we funny as hunters? It was like, well, I went through. It was so hot. I came out bleeding. It was great.
Yeah, that is one of the best things.
Or it was
about
so
being
cold,
eight.
And you've got these stories.
Yeah.
I had ice dripping off of me.
Oh,
it was great.
Yeah,
maybe not at the time.
But those are the memorable ones. Like we talk about all the animals in the trophy room. You know, everybody walks in and they see. Oh man, that's a big one. A lot of people notice like that stuff first, but it's all those stories of freezing, of like bleeding through a hunt and just absolutely adoring it.
Yeah. What's also interesting is you start realizing is you look for these little characteristics on the animals.
Mm-hmm.
Like just like a pronghorn antelope. Like you look at all these different pronghorn and you go, that's kind of neat. Look how his horns do this.
Yeah.
Look how they do
it's
that.
It's like they're no two the same.
No two the same.
Yeah, like whitetails, there's no two the same.
No.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So what kind of animals do you guys have here at the ranch that people can hunt?
Well, we obviously have whitetails,
mm-hmm.
Really good whitetails. And then the other species are species that are no longer huntable or even extinct where they're indigenous from. And we do have the axis deer, which today in Texas might as well be a whitetail.
Right. Yeah.
But they're from India, and you can't hunt them there anymore. And really, really good eating. We have the real endangered ones are like the Bukharan Markhor from the southern Russia, Azerbaijan region. They may be extinct there now, but anyways,
really?
We have a big herd of those.
Isn't that interesting? Because I think it's something we've talked about before is all the programs of conservation of these species that don't even exist anywhere else.
But they're
some of these ranches are like what you guys are doing.
Right, right. But there's some amazing success stories around the world I'll tell you about in a minute. But then things like Nubian ibex from the Sudan, which is not a place you'd go and hunt one today.
No.
And then, Trans-Caspian Urials, again, very endangered. Iranian red sheep, because we're not allowed to go to Iran anymore. And, some really unique species.
Wow.
Wonderful.
And what are you, those are some of the ones you're working on with as far as, because I know you have sort of a program for the endangered species here.
Yeah, we have a pretty large breeding program with 7 species in it. And then what we do, a lot of people don't realize, but a big part of our business, and that's a huge business in Texas, like $3 billion industry, it's huge. We sell more animals back into the zoo circuit than we actually hunt.
Huh.
So when the animals are weaned, we run them through a chute, and we separate the males from the females, put the breeders back into the breeding area,
right.
Their big area, 2-acre area, with a lot of structure and housing and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the males go up into an aging system, and they'll typically, they'll get sold at 2 or 3 or 4 years old because a zoo will want to change its genetics, which is smart.
Right.
And then if they reach 4 or 5 years old, we'll just release them to the wild, and off they go.
Gotcha.
Run around the ranch.
Cool.
Where
the females typically will get sold always back into the zoo circuit.
Okay.
For a zoo that's looking for a new species. Or
okay. Right, right.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's the conservation of it, and I think that's what a lot of people get hung up on a place this size, is that they don't realize what goes in on the back end of it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Tim started this out for conservation and giving back,
mm-hmm.
not to make a profit and just be this wonderful businessman.
Profit ain't in the picture.
Yeah, exactly.
We have a saying in the ranching business in Texas.
Yeah.
The best way to make $1 million in the ranching business in Texas is start with 10 of them.
That's I mean, the facilities
labor of love.
Here
it is
amazing.
Yeah.
The facilities here are
oh,
amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, great people. Well, and all, like you kind of mentioned it, is the revelations when you've got some of your instructors, Dave and Dog, and some of these guys who, we were trying to do something. He wasn't even going to teach us anything.
No.
for this first part with this video we're doing. I'm like, well, let me set up and I'll do this. And I think Dave couldn't help himself because he's watching, like, can I please jump in here and help you with this? Yeah. Like, if you put a pack here, if you do this, and you're like, oh, now I'm steady. Yeah. Now I'm not wavering off the target.
Well, but guys, you don't know what you don't know. And I mean, and honestly, we learn a ton from our clients.
Yeah.
Like every year we do what we call a PH Invitational. So right after Dallas or the SEI show, we'll bring in outfitters from around the world, guides and outfitters. And we do it literally every year, about 20 guys a year. And it's really 3 days of drinking and 2 days of shooting, basically. But most of those guys don't have this opportunity at all. Right. I mean, an African PH, typically, the longest shot he's ever going to make is 100 yards.
Right.
And so they come in, and we let them do the safari and the precision course, a mixture. And so they're getting to shoot 700-yard steel plates, and it's just, it's something they never get to do. Yeah. And they learn a lot. But we have them teach us new tricks and new things, like shooting on sticks and different ways to do it. And we learn a ton from those guys.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
It's a wonderful program.
Yeah.
Well, and you guys aren't teaching, like, principles. Like, some of the stuff, you're teaching the principles, but you grow, and I think it's about opening your mind to new ideas and new thinking, which is what I started to learn throughout this little trip, is opening my mind to, well, it's just not this way. Look at all that's around you. Look what's surrounding
you. Very important point, and one of the things we're proudest of is everything we teach here is a way. So we're going to show you lots of ways to do it, you know, then it's yours to pick which one works best for you. Anybody that's going to tell you, no, this is the only way you can shoot, that's a bunch of crap.
Yeah.
That's
not true. Yeah, they haven't tried enough stuff, probably.
Right. Or it works well for them, so everybody in the whole world should do it, I guess, but that's not reality of it.
You gotta
not
have
everybody's
that,
built the same.
That intot moment. I never thought of that moment.
Well, I've had about 1,000 of them out here, and it's driving me nuts. It is. And it's frustrating for me. I guess this is entirely frustrating because, you know, Dave was leaving for the day and he was like, oh, I'll see you guys later, you know, have a good trip. And I was like, yeah, thanks, Dave. Get out of here. quit teaching.
You're driving me crazy.
Like, I needed a notebook just to follow him around and go, okay, what next? And then I got to talking to Dog at the bar last night and he blew my mind again. So, like, there's never a dull moment around here.
Well, those are guys who are talking decades of knowledge that's just swimming around in their head.
Yep.
And they just spit stuff out and you go, dang.
Yeah.
Well, you just changed the way I mount a scope for the rest of my life.
Well, and that's another thing is your gear setup. If you consider yourself a hunter and a gun guy and a gear guy, I think you owe it to yourself to experience something like this because you are going to learn 100%.
Well, like Jim's saying, like, well, if it's a way, and if the only a way you've ever learned was
Your
granddad showed you how to throw a scope on a gun. Maybe there's a better way. Maybe there's
certainly another way. That's right.
Right, another way. But I think it all goes back to that, just opening up your mind and accept the fact that you are going to learn when you come here.
Right.
Like you are going to learn.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we've never really had an issue with that. We've had some folks, usually guys, that have been hunters for years. And it takes them a day or two, and we don't push them. You just kind of let them. They'll figure it out. And it's never failed yet.
They'll get there.
Yeah, that's why we have the signs all over the lodge. And coming in the front gate, you know, a parachute doesn't open unless it's, or a parachute doesn't work unless it's open. Neither does your mind. So.
Yeah. I love all the signs around here. The signs are the greatest thing.
They are great.
I mean, you could spend hours in the trophy room. There's all kinds of species and everything. But if you really take the time to, like, look at the signs and read what they're about, you start to gain a greater appreciation for FTW Ranch.
Well, it tells you kind of the mindset of you guys, right? Whether it's the teaching part or there's some funny signs or whatever right? Sure.
It's entertaining. And you know, one of the coolest things that I didn't realize is they have, like, youth hunter training here too. Youth shooter experience.
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, talk about getting them started the right way.
Yeah, what I'll tell you, there's two good things have come out of this COVID thing. Not many, but two that we know of. 5.5 million new gun owners, right? That's a good thing. But number two is people have awakened to realize that, you know, with all the issues going on in the big cities, you know, what if I have to feed my family?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or her dad hunted and she never got into it. And she has nowhere to start. And imagine. You know, you had a father that hunted, I had a father that hunted, we were lucky.
Right.
But just imagine if you woke up one day and you know what, gee, I want to provide some meat for my table, for my kids.
Yeah.
and you had no idea how to start.
Yeah, where do you start?
Talk about intimidation.
A lot of the world's been teaching you it's ill, you know, it's immoral to kill something. Mm-hmm. Well, everything dies to feed something else in the world, period.
Yes.
So if she's interested in getting into hunting, where does she start?
Yeah.
Talk to a buddy, and you go into a deer camp, and you're probably not going to learn the right way. Mm-mm. So this class is really cool because it's we bring them in for five nights, 4 days. And the first day and a half, we're training them how to shoot. And then on day two, they're going to start their first hunt. And the class includes a whitetail doe.
Okay.
Or a doe of some species here. Yeah. And then they're going to get to shoot that after they've been trained how to shoot. And then we're bringing in a professional butcher who's going to teach them actually how to cape the hide off.
Oh, wow.
Take the meat off the bone, how to package it properly. And then a wild game chef is going to teach them how to cook it. And then a game warden. God.
I need this.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah. And then a game warden to bring him in and say, yeah, even though you're not from Texas, here's the general game laws. Mm-hmm. Don't get entrapped in. Don't fall into trouble.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then we're going to bring in biologists to teach people what deer eat, where they live, what time of the day do they move, depending on the moon cycle and that sort of thing. And so, yeah, teach them from A to Z, everything. Yeah. So
the conservation aspects of hunting, not
sure.
It's bad.
Right.
It's bad. It's the conservation. You're doing good for the environment.
Right. Yeah.
That's one of the things that fascinates me is that you guys take them from start to finish. I mean, you can take a blank slate and totally like ingrain our culture and what we're about.
So you guys have all these different ranges here, and you have a lot of different targets. Some of the fun ones that show up on video a lot are the charging elephant, charging Cape Buffalo, and movers and all that stuff. I know that a lot of people will come to you guys before they go on a dangerous game hunt to get tuned up.
Yep.
Most people have never been on a dangerous game hunt. Most hunters certainly have never, you know, they do whitetail or they do whatever's in their region.
Sure.
What is it about dangerous game hunting? What is it for people that is just so attractive or alluring about it?
Well, it's a little bit part of the similar mentality of the special operations world. There's a reason that special operations folks train from the ground up and again and again and again and again. Then they get a gun in their hand and they learn instinctive reaction, you know, instincts, mm-hmm. and, you know, QRB and all these types of things. One of the reasons I recommend people come here before they go on a buffalo hunt or an elephant hunt or a lion, a leopard, you know, even a brown bear. You know, charges, relatively speaking, are very rare, but they do happen.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't really know what they're going to do when that happens. We've literally had guys throw their gun on the ground.
And wow.
And so we get them through that, and they didn't do it again. But, I mean, the reaction of this life-size animal charging at you from 10 feet away, and it can happen.
Yeah.
So, number one, it's important because they personally need to understand, hey, what am I going to do in the heat of the battle? Am I going to throw my gun down and run? Or am I going to stand and face the danger?
Yeah.
So that's important. But helping people, especially on a safari, dangerous game safari, help them to understand what you can expect. Here's how you should react.
Yeah.
Here's what you should not do. You know, it's just all A to Z on everything, what to expect on a safari. And I don't want to say if a guy doesn't come through it before his first safari, he didn't make the right decision. I'm just saying your safari will go off a lot better if you do come through it.
Well, sure. you owe it to yourself.
You do. It's expensive.
Yeah, it's an expense. It's not, you know,
absolutely.
$2,500 whitetail hunt you're spending your money on. You're just doing that for the flight.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you owe it to yourself to be as tuned up and as prepared, and you owe it to the animal.
Right.
I mean,
coming here to do that is a lot of fun, too.
Oh, it's a ton of fun. Yeah. No, it's a ton of fun. But to your point, you know, we've had people that are going back for their second safari, a lot of students, because they went one time and they went, I could have done better. They wounded a few animals or whatever. The PH yelled at them because they did something silly, or muzzle discipline's a problem for them or whatever. A lot of people don't think that through. And then they go on their second safari after coming through here, and they'll call us or write us and usually come back again a third time, but they'll say, man, did I enjoy my safari a lot better the second time.
Oh, yeah.
Because they knew what to expect and know how to handle each circumstance. And that's the problem. The danger or the sad part for me is a person goes the first time without understanding what's really going to happen. They might have talked to a buddy and they think they know, but that's not what's really going to happen on the ground. And they go and never go back because they just had a terrible, miserable experience.
Yeah.
And what a shame.
Yeah.
That is a shame. And another thing that they would, I would think, you got to learn is, and you kind of mentioned it when you said we were 8 yards away from an elephant, is the shot placement and on these different animals in Africa is different than a whitetail.
Yeah. Yep, very different.
And, you know, like, you don't shoot an elephant from 100 yards away.
Right.
Right?
Absolutely.
I mean,
not.
Talk through that. I mean, right. Some of the differences.
Yeah, you want to, like I said earlier, you want to get as close as you can to an elephant and even a buffalo, because you're looking for the maximum, you know, amount of energy out of your weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and shot placement on elephants, very critical. I mean, yes, they have a heart that's this long and this wide, and it's a big target. But, man, you better be in the right crease in the back of his edge of his shoulder to puncture that heart. Or his brain is about the size of a loaf of bread, and that sounds like it's easy. But from the front, every time he moves his head, the angle's changing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So penetration of the brain's a real issue. And we teach people, they'll come in here thinking, well, I'm going to do a frontal brain shot on an elephant. By the time they leave here, they're going, nope, I'm doing side brain.
Yeah.
Because they get it. I
mean, right.
And at 8 yards or at 15 yards, now it's a totally different angle.
Right. Yeah.
So it's there's a lot of science to it. And buffalo, not as tricky as an elephant, but, you know, you might think, well, I'm going to shoot him right below the chin. And you might get lucky and hit the spine, but more likely you need to be shooting him down in the heart in the lower part of the chest.
Mm-hmm.
So we have all those target acquisition drills and you know, a shot placement video that they really enjoy.
Yeah, anatomy's different.
Oh, different.
Those critters.
Yeah, quite a bit different.
Well, and they're a little bit larger than what you're normally hunting here in the States.
Yeah.
I think
they're
that's
also
a
tougher.
Yeah.
A lot tougher.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got to survive somehow.
Yeah.
They're not running from bobcats.
Buffaloes look at you like you owe them money.
Yeah. Yeah, they do, too.
They don't mess
Especially
around.
When you get into a herd of 100 of them.
Yeah.
A lot of people just lose it. Like, okay, what are they going to do when I shoot that one in front of
right.
me?
Right.
So, but normally they just run off. Charges are pretty rare.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, but it will happen.
Wounded buffalo, maybe.
That's a different story.
Different deal.
Yeah. Especially a wounded leopard. That's a real problem.
Yeah,
but I've heard so many horror stories.
Oh, there's just tons of them. Yeah. But a lot of people don't realize they get here and realize that the hippo is actually the most dangerous animal in the world.
Yeah.
They think sharks are, and that's not true at all.
No.
Hippos kill 5 to 8 people a day in Africa.
A day.
Yeah.
Because they're so terrible. Of course, we never find out about most of them because, it's tribal.
Well, they're big and they're ornery, right?
Very, very, very territorial. Territorial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they, somebody will float down the river in their canoe and ride over a hippo pod and go whack. There it goes. Or the worst thing you can do is get between the river and the hippo.
Like when he's on land.
Feed on land at night.
Oh, okay.
Come morning time, they want to go to the water. And if you're in the way, you got a problem.
So
it's a real issue. So there's just nuances about Africa. But, I mean, you got the same nuances, not same, but as many as you do in Alaska hunting a brown bear. Or,
sure.
But I feel that stateside, there's less things that really want to eat you.
Yeah.
I mean, they will eat you.
Yeah.
Everything bites or claws or pokes you or whatever out there. All right, so if somebody says hunting, training for hunting.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Do it.
I think your eyes are open to this.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is something every shooter should experience. And if you consider yourself, like I said, as a serious hunter, I think you owe it to yourself to experience it.
I mean, honestly, if you could spend 4 days out here, not only super fun.
Yeah.
But now you've just gotten this whole skill set that you didn't have before.
It's an influx of knowledge that is going to overload. It's going to overwhelm you at first. It really is.
It's
going to overwhelm you. But once you sit down and you think of the application of what you're doing and what you're trying to accomplish, I think that's where like the FTW Ranch Pro Staff does such a good job, and the trainers do such a good job, is because they put it into terms that you understand. And it's applicable to what you're going to accomplish.
Well, that's a good stopping point. I think if you grew up hunting, or even if, like Tim said, if you're interested in getting into hunting, and maybe you're going, I don't know much about this. I didn't grow up with my dad or my grandpa taught me.
Yeah.
This may be a place for you guys to start. What do you think?
And to all the other conservation points, and just keeping yourself safe, and doing a good job on a hunt. There's nothing worse than wounding an animal.
Yeah.
And having to fly home on that long flight, trust me.
Oh, it's been there,
done that. And every hunter has, if he's hunted enough. We all try not to do it.
Yeah.
But just take, for instance, Pakistan, which is a conservation miracle in itself, with 4 different kinds of markhor. In 1980, there were like 2,500 total markhor left in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Today, there's almost 30,000. Wow. Really? Because they started hunting them. Because now they have value. Now they're being preserved.
Right. Right.
But the, like the Astor Marcor is $130,000. You really want to go over there and not have your act together at 500 yeah. yards?
No.
Yeah, you better rethink that program.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because your average shot on those is 450 to 650, which is
really?
A long, long shot. And so, yes. yeah, it's a cheap insurance yeah. policy if you want to look at it.
That's
that
right.
Way.
Absolutely.
Now, you want to be more successful.
Yes.
You owe it to yourself. How they found out more?
How do they find out more?
Well, contact us. So you can, they can call us at 830-234-4366.
Okay.
Or go to www.ftw, Foxtrot Tango Whiskey, Sam, S-A-A-M, .com. So www.ftwsam.com.
Okay. There you go. I think you're thinking, maybe I should get some hunting training. Yes.
We all need it.
Well, nothing else. It's a ton of fun.
Exactly.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Great food. Also, great people. Oh. So, all right. That's it for us. We'll see you next time on Gun Talk Hunt.